Entrepreneurs work hard to achieve success. In today's discussion, host Will Roundtree gets to the real story of entrepreneurship. It's not all sunshine and rainbows. You'll hear from entrepreneurs who have gone through the dark side of the process and today are willing to share their insight with you. Welcome to Full-Time CEO, the SHIT they don't tell you. Now, here is your host, Will Roundtree.
I'm looking at this hip-hop thing like war. Man, we in the South, we ghetto boys, just rap a lot. Man, it's Houston, it's us against the world.
Right.
You know, we finna show everybody what we made of.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Full-Time CEO Podcast with the shit they don't tell you, where we speak with influential individuals, CEOs, full-time CEOs, entrepreneurs, moguls, anybody that holds some type of influence, they will be on this podcast. But more importantly, I'm extremely excited today because we have a very special guest. Well, all my guests are special, but today we got a legend in the building. Not just any legend, hip-hop legend. So much of a legend that my book couldn't even stand up. That's how much of a legend we have in the building today. But before I introduce my guest, let me read off a couple of the accolades of this legend we have. First of all, he was a Golden Glove champion in 1985. That means there's some history there. That means he can knock somebody out too. Let me just preface that. Influential in the hip hop space. One third of the iconic rap group, the Ghetto Boys. Social media influencer. You've been on social media and this YouTube for a long time. Social activist. Say social activist, right?
Yeah, that's strong right there. Okay. That's okay. Why the book fell again.
The book keeps falling. Yeah. Creator of the Ghetto Boys Reloaded podcast. That thing is doing some numbers, too. It's doing some numbers.
Yeah, we up there.
A father, a friend, a brother, an entrepreneur, a businessman. I'm going to just go out and say mogul, my good friend and brother, Willie D. What's going on, man?
Hey, man, I'm just happy to be here.
Man, it's been a long time,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah, it has. It's beautiful to finally sit down with you, you know, in your backyard.
Hey, man, I've been trying to get you out here for a minute.
I know, man. I hadn't been to Vegas in 7 years, man. I was like, damn, man, Vegas has changed. I mean, I'll be straight up with you, bro. Like, I was not impressed with Vegas 7 years ago.
Really?
I just wasn't. After you see, 25 casinos,
They all the same.
Yeah, but the things that they've done between those casinos with the brands coming in, with all of the different, the stores and the restaurants.
Right.
Restaurants, very impressive.
Definitely.
Because I'm from Houston, so we take our food seriously.
They definitely take food serious in Houston.
Yeah. So see that, to see all of the building going on here. It's beautiful to see, man. I mean, I want to come right back.
Hey, well, you always got a home here as long as I'm in Vegas.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Well, man, I appreciate you taking time out your very busy schedule to sit down with us here today on the Full-Time CEO Podcast. And just wanted to talk to you, just a little bit about yourself personally, your career, and just this venture into entrepreneurship, because that's one of the things I think a lot of people don't realize, especially in the industry. And I speak with a lot of up-and-coming artists. You're an entrepreneur. And you have to start thinking like an entrepreneur. But before we jump into that, who is Willie D? Everybody should already know.
Yeah.
But for those who may have not had television or radio or internet over the past 25 years, who is Willie D, man?
Yeah, thank you hit on a lot of points. Entrepreneur, member of the Ghetto Boys, family man, father. The father thing to me is. The father thing to me trumps everything.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you why. So, like a long time ago, man, I realized that like all of the great men that I know personally, I'm talking about on a personal level as far as like these guys who had great relationships with their children.
Correct.
Were the men that I respected the most. I was like, man, And these were guys with honor. I was like, man, if I could like win my kids over, I'd be good on the other side. Mm. I think everything else would be all right.
Right.
See, and that's because like men who have children, they understand that, I'm talking about men who love their children. They understand that once you give life, life is bigger than yours.
Absolutely.
And so you tend to sow into your children and you make moves considering them at all times. And when you consider your children first, oftentimes you don't leap into things that could put you in harm's way. And you don't do certain things. It's like certain things I don't even do on social media. People think that I might be like totally transparent on social media, but I'm not. That's foolish for anybody to be socially. I'm transparent. Everybody should have a public and a private side. All of this shit by keeping it real, you're keeping it dumb. Mm. That's stupid to show everybody, all of you, 24/7.
Right.
That's very stupid.
Now, are you protective in showing your family and your kids online?
Because
I know there's a fine line where people are like I have friends who are influencers and they're like, man, I want to show my kids. I want to show my family off. Then I mean, some people are like, I want to keep that private. And you've been in the industry a long time. How do you find that balance?
Yeah, the same way I did with allowing them to choose what career path they wanted to take.
Okay.
Like I never tried to push a particular career path on them. What I did is gave them access and options. You know, by putting the work that I put in, I was able to be able to finance whatever it is that they might decide they want to do. So I just put them in different things, just like you start them off early and you put them in your football, your cheerleader, you put them in social programs, let them get involved in plays, see if they got little acting chops and things like
right.
You know, you're watching and, you know, that's the goal, like, of a parent is the guide, right? You know, it's not to control, it's the guide. So when they're moving along the way, it's kind of like this is like parents right here, this mom and daddy.
Correct.
And the kid in the middle. And so they got all this wiggle room right here. And you run it like that.
Mm.
And so they can do whatever they want, build whatever they want. You know, sky's the limit.
Correct.
You know, the world is theirs. But when they get off track, boom, get right back. You know, it's not the control, but it's just the guide.
Right. Keep them guided in that balance.
And I noticed, like, a lot of times that some parents, they want to be friends with their children so bad that they allow their children to make mistakes that they don't have to make, because, you know, sometimes their kids are very, they have these independent minded kids who do everything independently but pay bills.
Mm.
But they want to allow them to just do whatever they want to do and make their own choices. Mom, I don't need you to tell me this. I want to do it on my own and da da da. Well, leadership comes in. This is where good parenting comes in. You say, okay, well, that's not going to work. That's not good, and here's why. See, and so, you know, you kind of like you lead, but you guide. You make sure that you give them opportunity. You know, you want them to grow into themselves and be independent thinkers, have their own opinion. You never want your children to be afraid to give their own opinion.
Correct.
To have their own opinion, but at the same time, you know, it's incumbent upon you as a parent to make sure that you provide proper guidance. So there's times that I know I'm getting ready to go in on social media.
You got to think about it, huh?
And sometimes I call my son and my daughter and I say, look, this is what I'm about to do. What do you think?
Right.
And if they have a problem with it, I won't do it.
Oh, wow.
I straight up won't do it.
Wow.
I'm not the parent who say, I'm the man, I'm the daddy, I'm the parent. I'm not that dude.
Right.
You know, because I want the same level of respect when it's my turn.
Mm.
When they jump on social media and they're putting stuff on there that I'm not in agreement with, I want them to respect my feelings.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't want them to embarrass me.
Mm.
So, you know, I subscribe to treating people how you want to be treated.
Right. No, that's very powerful. And I think that, like you say, being a father trumps everything, because it helps you to dictate the course that you want to take. And so even with making some of the decisions that you've chosen to make, whether it's leaving that legacy, you know, which we'll get into, because you definitely are leaving a legacy for your children. But let's take it back to the ghetto boy days. You know, a lot of people have heard the stories, but not necessarily know how the Ghetto Boys actually got started or how you became a part of the Ghetto Boys. Do you mind sharing that part of your story?
I'll try to give you the shortest version as possible because there's many layers to it. But
definitely.
I initially started off as a solo artist.
Okay.
I signed the Rap A Lot as solo artist. That was a version of the Ghetto Boys that already existed before I and Brad got into the group.
Okay.
Or even Bill. Bill was a dancer, like a dancer. He would go out and entertain the crowd and get them all hyped before the Ghetto Boys group would go out.
Wow. And so he was already a part of the Ghetto Boys.
He was a part of the group, but he wasn't a member. He
okay.
was a dancer.
Okay.
And they used him for op.
Mm.
Midget. Put him on the
right.
cover.
Put him out
there. Gonna draw some attention.
Definitely.
Right? So after I finished my first album, Jay is now getting ready to put out the Ghetto Boys' second album.
Okay.
Ready to start recording. They asked me to write a couple songs for the group. So I wrote, "Do It Like a Geo" and "Let a Ho Be a Ho."
Right.
The group members at the time, they didn't like the "Let a Ho Be a Ho" song.
Wow.
But they was cool with the "Do It Like a Geo."
Right.
Now, Jay was like feeling everything. He was feeling everything I was doing, and everybody around him was feeling the songs that I wrote.
Okay.
So he gave them an ultimatum. He said, "Look, man, y'all either rap this stuff or quit the group, go solo. But this is the direction I want to pick the group in."
Okay.
So Prince Johnny C, who was in the group at the time, left. He went solo. Jukebox was going to be in the group, but he had some personal issues on the day of recording, the first day of recording, so he quit the group.
Wow. Did the first album ever come out?
Well, they had an album out before
okay.
I joined.
Okay.
Making Trouble. That was the first album. That was before me and Brad
okay.
came along. That album went out then. That was the first one. So on the second album, the follow-up, Sophomore, is when he asked me to write for the group. I start writing the songs. He likes the songs. Jay come to me one day and say, "Look, I got a dude on the South Side named DJ Action, who everybody know now as Scarface."
Right.
"See, I want to make y'all to put y'all in the group as rappers with Jukebox." So it was going to be three of us rapping,
okay.
me, Jukebox, and Brad. Bill was not going to be in the group. I was vehemently opposed to having somebody opening up, you know, doing that type of stuff.
Right.
I was looking at that like it was a tie show. Like, nah,
right.
We ain't doing that.
Right.
So fast forward, we get to the night in the studio, first night of the studio, start recording. And I think it was the next day, dude quit the group. He got a letter from his girl. And I think I never have verified anybody or confirmed it, but I think it was somebody said something along the lines of, you know, the letter said something about woman was pregnant. Woman was pregnant and
correct.
He told me he needed to get a real job.
Wow.
So he quit.
Wow.
So now it's down to me and Brad. And we cool with that because we killing it, you know? So Bill is hanging out in the studio, rapping Public Enemy, and he drinking a 40. He's just hanging out in the studio.
Okay.
And he's going like, "Yeah, the rhythm, the rebel. Without a pause, I'm lowering
right.
my level." And I check him out. I'm like, boom, light come on. And man, let's put Bill in the group. Let's let Bill say, "Jukebox Boy." And everybody started laughing. I said, "Yeah, see, that's what everybody else going to do until they hear these dope-ass lyrics I'm going to write."
Mm. So you're responsible for Bushwick being in a group?
I'm 100% responsible.
Wow. So I heard an interview somewhere with you. You said it's like you have foresight. You felt you had that foresight at that time when you saw Bushwick kind of, you know, rapping in the background, and then you came up with the idea to bring them on to the group.
Yeah. So when I said that, you know, I was, you know, I can be at times, you know,
right.
I can be a little prankster,
right?
But you know, I saw him rapping, and I'm like, man, I'm looking at this hip hop thing like war, man. We in the South, We ghetto boys. This rap a lot. Man, it's Houston. It's us against the world.
Right.
You know, we finna show everybody what we made of. So I'm looking for any kind of advantage I can get. Mm. And I'm thinking, man, if we put this dude in the group, it's going to give us some extra attention.
Completely right? Left field.
Right. So everybody started laughing. So Jay said, Bill, what you think? And Bill said, I don't know, but I can try. I swear to God, he said it was just as I said.
Right.
I don't know, but I can try.
Right.
And so Jay is just sitting there thinking, you know, like he's, you know, scratching his head. And he's like, I say, man, if I write him something and he can do it, I say, is he in the group?
Right.
Jay like, oh, I don't know, man. Let's see. Let's see. So I took him downstairs. We sat in the kitchen at the breakfast table. I asked him some questions about himself. And I embellished it with what I thought it might be like to walk in his shoes.
Wow.
And I came up with size and shit. And, you know, because the questions I'm asking him, right. I'm asking him things about, man, how was it like growing up, you know, being a midget? Yeah, I'm not a midget, I'm a dwarf.
Right.
But, you know, so I'm like, ah, is it like, you know, just being your size? What's it like? What was it like? And he was just telling me all the challenges, you know? But then he would say certain things that would suggest that he had some type of advantage with his size because people would underestimate him.
Right.
And then he said, like, when he having sex, he didn't have to get on his knees. He could stand up in it, you know? So I put that in the song, right. You know?
Right.
And so everything was like flipped. I just flipped everything. Everything that you thought negative about a short dude, I just flipped it.
Wow.
And empowered him, you know? And I came up with size and shit. 3 days later, Bill recorded the song. And that's how he became a ghetto.
Wow.
Boy. That's how he became a rapper. That's how he became an official member of the Ghetto Boys. When Bill recorded that song, he didn't even have a contract.
Mm.
Bill didn't sign a contract until like maybe like a month or so after we finished recording the album, because we recorded the album in 10 days. That's the We Can't Be Stopped album.
Classic.
Yeah.
Classic.
So I said I'm 100% responsible for him being in. I won't say 100, maybe 99, you know, because Jay still had to make the call. Right. At the end of the day, Jay still had to say, yeah, he still had to have enough foresight himself to say, you know what, might be a good look.
Definitely.
You know?
And well, I mean, just even hearing that story, though, is powerful because, like, these are the things that nobody would have ever known. You know, most people probably didn't even know there was an original Ghetto Boys. And so I always like you sharing that story because a lot of my supporters love hip hop and I always want them to really just get that history because I think we don't get enough of the history from our legend.
. 88% of businesses never reach the six-figure mark. 50% of businesses go under before their fifth year. In business, 66% go under within 10 years. Most people aren't taught what it takes to be a successful entrepreneur, the skills required to own and operate a business, or how to grow and scale their business. Don't become a statistic. Rise above these numbers and set yourself up for success by having an experienced business coach in your corner. Ready to break through barriers and get to the next level you've been waiting to reach? Retain Will Roundtree as your personal coach. Specializing in business and real estate coaching, Will has the experience, resources, and network to help you accelerate your growth and maximize your income. Visit www.wemanagementservices.com or call 702-330-3278 to learn more. Hey, want to gain additional insight into how Will the Credit King Roundtree plays the financial game? Follow him on social media at Mr. Will Roundtree to get daily entrepreneurial, investing, and wealth-building tips. Learn how you can get in the best position to make the right plays. Follow at Mr. Will Roundtree across all social media platforms today.
You are listening to the Full-Time CEO, the SHIT They Don't Tell You, with your host, Will Roundtree. Now, back to the show.
So you guys formed a group. You're putting out albums, you're putting out music, and then now you have the iconic record, My Plan Tricks On You. Can you walk me through that process? And did you guys think that song was going to be as big as it was? And just, what was the process of even, with the video? I mean, it was a very iconic video, yeah, too.
As soon as I heard the song, I was like, this song is going to be a number one song.
Really?
I'm about to get paid. No, I'm bullshit. I didn't know, man. I didn't know. I did not know. I had no idea. In fact, like my process when writing songs is not to write hit.
Okay.
It is to write classic. Mm. There's a difference between a hit and a classic. Now, sometimes a hit can be a classic. A classic can be a hit. But you can have a hit and not have a classic.
Absolutely.
So I'm more concerned with classic because I feel like if I write something that people will never forget, then I am going to stand the test of time.
Right.
So that's my goal. Every time I write a song, it's like to put my foot into that song, that particular song. I don't think about what I did in the past. I don't think about what I'm going to do in the future. It's like what I'm doing with this song right here.
Right.
I damn near run it like a game of football or basketball or something. I take one game at a time. Mm. I take one song at a time and put everything I got into it.
Right.
Everything I got into that one song. Mm. So when I did it, every song that we did on that album, that was the We Can't Be Stopped album. Every song that I did, just like songs before and after, the albums before and after, one song at a time.
Right.
So when we finished the album, I thought it was just a good song. I didn't think it was a great song.
Wow.
I thought it was good, just like all the other songs. I just thought I never just think my songs are like great. I just always, maybe I do think they're great, but I look at them, I look at the greatness like I would look at my kid. Like, they're great in their own way. It's good kids, great kids in their own
way. Each song had its own individual greatness of something, right?
Yeah, they have their own thing that they're each good at doing, right? And so I look at the songs the same way. And so when I craft these songs, I put everything into it, and then I'm gone, and then I let the public decide, which one is going to, which one that they're going to resonate most.
Right? Okay.
So after we finished the song, we did what we normally do is take a vote. Okay, which one you like the most? So we take a vote with everybody around us. We let as many people that we trust listen to the song. That's going to give us their honest opinion about the song. And everybody kept saying, well, I like the whole album. I mean, I like this song, I like this song. Man, all them motherfuckers jamming. That's how they would talk. All them jamming. Right. Yeah, man. But if you had one song to pick, if it was your last $10,
what song would you pick?
And you had to just buy one song, which one would it be? And invariably, they kept going back to My Mind's Playing Tricks.
Wow.
And so we released that song without even thinking, like, we didn't even get a chance to get into the budget. Rap-A-Lite never even got a chance to really get into the budget of the song because as soon as they sent it to the radio, they started playing. I mean, it just, and My Mind's Playing Tricks is what they call a phoner in radio. A phoner is a song where the requests come in where the phone is ringing off the hook. And you get about maybe one or two phoners a year.
Okay.
This is a song where it's just ringing off the hook. And when you call and they answer the phone, they almost know
that's what they're going
to ask. That's what you're asking about. You know, them like a concert coming to town and you're trying to win tickets or something. They know you calling about those tickets.
Okay.
Right. You calling about Mind Playing Tricks. Mm. They know. That song ran on the radio for 6 months and people used to tell me, man, I know it's your song and stuff. And, but don't you get tired of hearing it? Nope. Because that's going to be for all the times they're not playing our shit.
Mm.
You know?
Definitely.
So, like, yeah, play it. Play it. I don't care how many. Play it. I don't care if they play 1,000 times a day.
Right. No. Right. It's interesting because I was watching something on social media, and they were talking about some of the most iconic opening lines of a record. I would have to say your verse is probably one of the most iconic opening lines in a record ever.
Well, that's not the opening line of a record.
For your verse.
For my verse.
Yes, for your verse is what I meant.
Yeah.
And so I would have to say that that's probably definitely in the top five.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Thank you, man.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
I was listening to it, on matter of fact, before you got here.
Yeah.
Yes. So you got the Ghetto Boys. You dropped Mind Playing Tricks on Me. Did they ever teach you guys anything about the business side of the music industry?
Hell no.
Because I hear a lot about...
Hell no.
I hear a lot about, entertainers blowing their budgets. They get in debt. Like, what was that like? Because if they're not, you're making, millions of dollars, or you have the potential to make millions of dollars, where does the financial literacy come into play? Is anybody teaching you? I mean, obviously, I would assume you have your accountants, your attorneys, but where does that come into play?
Yeah, in the music industry, people, they're not trying to teach you about business. It's the music. So if they ain't got nothing, something to do with music,
They don't care.
I mean, think about it though, fam. I mean, it sounds harsh, but if you think about McDonald's, right? McDonald's prides itself on paying minimum wage. Everybody knows it's a running joke around the world. Yeah, ain't gonna be working at McDonald's. He's making McDonald's minimum wage. You know, going in ain't no negotiating. You going in, you finna
making
get that.
Whatever they get you.
Your ass finna get $2 an hour, whatever they, whatever,
whatever
minimum wage is at that time. That's what you're about to get.
Right.
And you ain't got nothing in your mind saying I'm finna go in and negotiate. Right? You about to get minimum wage.
Right.
That's McDonald's. Well, the music industry is a little different in that you can negotiate, but you got to think. For the most part, you're dealing with people who are dreamers, and they have an opportunity to make their dream come true.
Correct.
And you have access. You got the key to open the door, let them in.
Come out the exec.
Exactly.
Okay.
They may not get another shot. So let's say you want to negotiate. You probably won't negotiate hard.
Because you just want the shot.
You want to make sure you get your foot in the door.
Mm.
But that's one of those things that, you have to decide what's best for you and what's going to make you sleep well. I know some people who've been able to successfully come in day one and do a very good deal day one. But most people, that's not going to happen for. And I mean, it didn't happen for Elvis. Didn't happen for Michael Jackson. Didn't happen for Prince. Didn't happen for Stevie Wonder. These are things that you typically gonna have to grow your way into.
Mm.
You have to prove yourself and prove your worth and actually be able to say, look, this is what I'm making. This is what I made the company. This is what I'm worth.
And you named all legends.
Day one going in. Yeah.
And you named all legends and they got
everybody,
the short end of the stick.
Everybody got a shitty deal going in. I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, that's the industry. And, you can say to yourself, okay, well, I'm gonna make sure that doesn't happen to me. Perhaps you will, but perhaps it could prevent you from getting on, because I know people who have played hardball in the negotiations and the record company just passed. I want to say it's not that record companies don't like when you negotiate. It's not that, or they don't respect it or whatever. Not that, but sometimes you have artists who ain't sold one record. Yeah, they're good. Yeah, you're talented. That's why we're talking. You're talented. Yeah. But still, I don't know for certain if this thing's going to pop. I just don't know. Record label don't know. They're taking a chance. But you have artists that go in so hard, they be like, they come in day one, want a Madonna contract. Day one, they want the Drake contract.
Mm.
All
right.
They want a contract. Whoever getting the most money, they
That's
want an Adele
want.
Contract.
Right.
Like, no, that ain't how it works. Adele didn't get an Adele contract, but they want it out the gate sometimes. And so sometimes artists are so locked in with not getting fucked that they end up fucking themselves.
Mm. You think a lot of that is the people they have around them?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's the people that you have around you that will also crumble your empire. Mm.
And they usually serve no purpose on your journey or mission, is a lot of times what I see.
In most cases, they don't. Mm. But it's usually people that, you know, that are very close to you, like a spouse, a family member, a friend you've had for a while, or this new guy that has identified your weakness and knows how to say all the cool words that you want to hear. Rock you right to sleep.
Mm.
And these people, they are responsible for preventing you from growing your empire in the first place and even maintaining your empire. I've seen these type of people destroy empires.
So it's almost as if the industry, they don't want you to be empowered with that because they are always going to have the upper hand.
Yeah, well, think of it like this. If you're McDonald's and your going rate is $9.99 an hour.
Okay.
Why would you pay $10 if you can get somebody to work for $9.99? In business, the name of the game is to make as much money for yourself, for the business, as possible.
And
pay out the least amount of money as possible. A financial analyst will come in and look at your books and start being like, well, how can we save money? What can we save money at? What can we cut?
All right.
Look, I think you're paying too much right here. I don't think you have to pay that amount of money. No, I just don't think. I think that's too much money. And, you know, you start like looking, what can I cut? You know, you mean I can get somebody to do this for $5.99 instead of $9.99? You know, so it's like in business, that's just business.
Right.
That's why you hear people say, man, it ain't personal. It's business.
Right.
So what you have to do is decide, can I sleep with that? Is that something that I can sleep with? Because, you know, there's an old saying, you got to do what you got to do till you can do what you want to do. I'm cool with that.
Correct.
On every single level, I do what I got to do till I do till I can get to a point where I can do what I want to do.
Right.
And, you know, going in the game, like even with rap a lot, yeah, I ain't had no damn money, man. Broke, bro. I'm like a singing damn song, bro. I'm talking about I was so goddamn broke. Bro, like I was just happy to get on because in my mind, I was like, it really don't matter
what
this contract say, because the main thing is just doing the best I can with this talent I got. If I make the music and we make hit records, I'm going to make money, whether I get it from the paperwork or whether I get it from doing shows or whether I get it from endorsements. I'm going to figure out a way to get to the money if I got to go back in and renegotiate,
right,
which is what I did after that first big album, the Mind Playing Tricks. I went back in to renegotiate. And I was met with what the contract said. So I parted ways. And then I came back 4 years later when we came to an understanding.
Right.
You see? So, you know, if no matter what the contract say, if you don't like it, you know, you feel like it's not right, then you go back to the table and you try to renegotiate. And, you know, if a person is a real business person, you take out the emotions out of it, you really have to look at the bottom line. Well, what does this bottom line say? You know, like, can a renegotiating or giving this person more benefit me more than it would if I didn't give this person more? That's how I look at everything.
Just cut and dry.
I don't even look at the emotional shit.
Right.
I don't look at no part of the emotional, like bottom line, what's the bottom line and how does it affect me?
Yeah.
Like, if I do it this way, if I change this, if I give this person more, how does this affect, you know?
So where did
and
that
is
business,
it worth it? Is it worth it?
Where did that business savvy come into play with you? Because, you know, even just me knowing you personally, like, it's almost like you're always on the cutting edge of things when it comes to business. Where do you think that came in early? Was it something you studied? Was it just from, you know, you just paying attention to those around you and learning?
Yeah.
Just kind of by foresight?
That's a good question. Baptism through fire. Baptism by fire. It's like, you know, trial and error, you know.
Definitely.
Like I've had many businesses that failed. Many. Man, I've had a construction company failed. I've had a failed pharmacy, a therapy clinic. You know, I just look at situations where I say, man, how much money can I make? You know, and making money? Like, okay, let's
try it.
Let's
right.
try it. Like,
absolutely.
If we can make some money, man, let's talk.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But that's why I wasn't afraid of cryptocurrency. I was like, man, shit, how much?
Right.
I didn't even understand in my first investment. I keep hearing people talk about crypto. But I don't understand it. I don't understand it. Where can I go to learn about it? Like, man, how much? Do you see how much money being made? I'll figure that shit out later. I'll figure out completely
right,
understanding
right.
it later.
Just get in.
Let me get in.
Right, right.
And I'm going to figure it out later. And which is what I did.
Mm.
I made a mistake with the internet when it first hit. Chuck D told me about the internet in 1992. We had a fight in New York City. Chuck D said, Willie, they got the thing called the internet.
Wow. That sounds crazy even hearing that.
But that's how it, but I hear it
right,
because
right.
that's how it sounded when I heard the first.
Mm.
And that's how it sounds to a lot of people who aren't in it right now.
Right.
And who are afraid of it. It sounds weird. It sounds non-fungible. You know,
right.
they can't grasp it. They can't touch it. They're like, oh, you know? So that's how I was with the internet. I was like, when Chuck D told me that, I was like, I couldn't wrap my head around it. But it was Chuck D, so I couldn't dismiss it.
Right.
Because Chuck is smarter than most people. So I'm listening. And Chuck said, man, in 10 years, half the households in America are going to have computers. And I'm thinking, I got the money to buy a computer and I don't even have a computer. How is that going to happen?
Right.
Especially when I think about all the poor people that I know. How is that going to happen?
Right.
And then he told me, this is the kicker. He said, man, the postal service is going to be obsolete. Man, we're going to be getting our mail through our computer. And I'm thinking, how the hell are you going to get a mail through the computer? Like, I'm thinking physical mail.
Right,
like, how they
right.
going to deliver packages through the computer?
Right, right.
He was talking about email.
Email.
Way back then. And I didn't get an email address till 4 years later.
Mm.
And by maybe 3 years later, people started getting email addresses. But I was late to get an email address. Like, I need that shit. You
right.
know, like, people, but the people that were in business, they were required to have email addresses. You know? But I was late on that. And when the internet came, and it didn't completely pass me by because you see what I'm doing now.
Absolutely.
With it. But had I got in the very beginning, perhaps I could have taken my $10,000 and invested in an internet radio station and sold it a few years later like Mark Cuban did for $100 million, and I would be the owner of the Dallas Mavericks.
Wow. Or the Houston Rock.
Well, I said the Dallas Mavericks
yeah, right,
to
right.
stay, you know, in
right.
tune with
what he did.
With what he did.
Right.
But I said to myself, man, okay, I gotta keep my eyes and my ears open. I gotta be more receptive because I realized one thing about our people, oftentimes, when we hear ideas that we don't immediately connect to, we think of ways why it can't happen.
All the time. All the time.
Instead of thinking about ways it can happen.
Right.
I mean, at the very least, we should do a process of elimination and try to talk our way out of it, like do some checks and balances and say, okay, you know, how could it happen? How can it happen? And then you say, I just can't see it happen. Because I try to think of every way it could happen, and I just can't see it happen. So if you do that, you're going to be better off, right? But oftentimes, we just dismiss it. And on top of that, we won't even do research.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even do research when we had that conversation. I didn't do any research on the internet after that conversation.
Right. Well, a lot of times, our research, we go ask somebody who knows nothing about that industry. And we
yeah,
see that
exactly.
happen all the time.
Well, let me tell you something about Chuck, man.
Okay.
Now, After that, man, I'd be calling Chuck D every night. Hey, man, what's up? What's going on?
See what's going on.
What you on, baby? What's going
right,
on?
Right, right.
Because Chuck be way, I mean, when I say light years ahead of everybody, really? Chuck is light years ahead. He's one of the smartest people I know. You know, and it, the same thing with Ice Cube. Smartest people that I know. And that's why I be tripping when people start talking about, oh, yeah, he's a rapper, a rapper. Man, rappers are some of these guys.
Some of the most brilliant.
Some of the most brilliant people that I know, you know. But after that situation, I was like, I got to keep my eyes and my ears open, right, for the next opportunity. If it comes in my lifetime, I got to be ready. So around 2000, maybe 13, somewhere up in there, 12, I started hearing about, no, 2010, I started hearing about Bitcoin.
Okay.
This guy in New York reached out to me to ask me to market, do the marketing for this company. And he was going to put out ATM Bitcoin machines in the malls. Great idea. Sounded good. It was groundbreaking. And we just couldn't come to an agreement.
Okay.
Couldn't come to an agreement. So fast forward, I dropped it. And then 3 years later, my homeboys hit me up about Bitcoin. Hey, man, you might want to look at this. Going up, going up. And I kept dismissing him. Man, I don't want to mess with him. So he hit me for 3 weeks in a row, at least twice a day. Mm. You know, twice a week. He's like, you might want to look at this. So finally, it was at $5,700. And he said, I want to look at this. And I looked at that shit. $5,700. Damn. I saw it go from like $3,000
right.
to $5,700 in 3 weeks. I said, damn, I threw something in it.
Right.
Didn't even understand. I was like, okay, I throw something in it, right? And then it took off, went up to like $20,000, and I sold at $15,000. And I took that money, I diversified my coins, I bought some altcoins, I bought Dogecoin. Way back when Dogecoin was .. It had like 8-9 zeros right. in front of it. Had I held that Dogecoin, just off my Dogecoin holdings, I would have about 500 million.
Wow.
At least 500 million just off Dogecoin. So when I, so at this point, I'm thinking, when I saw that, right before I decided to jump on Bitcoin, I thought to myself, damn, maybe this is it. Maybe this is the next internet.
Right.
Maybe this is it. That's why I threw it on there. I was like, maybe this is it. I just chunked it over there and bam, it started happening. So when I think of selling my crypto now, I always go back to Dogecoin and I think about what happened.
Right.
Now, of course, cryptocurrency is a hugely volatile industry, but you never know what's going to happen. The owners of Dogecoin couldn't have imagined that would happen, right? But it just goes to show you, you never know. I started off Dogecoin with a $1,000 investment and I made tens of thousands, but I didn't make millions off of it. But it just goes to show you the power of cryptocurrency.
Right. And that's why you just can't be scared. And that's why you do your research. And to kind of pivot just a little bit about that, I know one of the things, you know, actually how you and I met.
Before you go too further, because I'm too much further.
Okay.
I don't want to forget.
Okay.
I think it's all right to be scared.
Okay.
Here's why.
Talk about that.
When I was growing up, people thought that I was fearless. They thought I was just this brave dude, right? I would regularly beat up 200 plus pound dudes. I mean, knock them out.
Right.
And I was like, most of time when I was in high school, I mean, I was like 150, 160. You know, I was not a big dude,
okay,
but I was very powerful and I was skilled in fighting and I would knock these dudes out like easy,
all right,
easy work. And so everybody always thought that, oh man, hey man, Willie D, man, he ain't scared of nobody. Willie Dennis, man, you know, Willie Dennis, man, he ain't scared of nobody. But it was my fear of losing that made me fight so hard.
Right.
I never wanted to get on the ground. Like you couldn't, like, when I see people get pinned on the ground when they fight, they be getting done bad. I'm like, oh, I don't want that to happen to me.
Don't want that, right.
So I can't get down. I, you know, like, especially so when I'm fighting a big dude, I know I can't let him get on top of me. So I'm fighting, man, with the strength of the ancestors. Every punch I throw, I'm trying to get it done.
Right.
I'm trying to kill it. I'm trying to leave a mark, you know? So it was that fear that drove me to be able to be victorious against these type of dudes, you know, in the street. It's fear of dying and not having my legacy secured is what drives me to get up every morning and go harder and, you know, still put in, you know, 17, 18 hours a day.
Correct.
When I'm already set for life financially. But it's that fear of, you know, it's that fear of expiring before I got my ducks in order. Correct. And my, where I got my generational wealth, you know, where it needs to be, where my great, 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 great grandchildren are good, you know? And it's that fear of not just having money, but having the structure to make sure that if along the way, I got a couple of fuck ups, they can't fuck up the money for the rest of the babies. You see, that's what drives me. So it's that fear. I think fear can be good if you use it in the right manner. But and even with crypto, man, I got some holdings in crypto.
Right.
But I still got a little fear of that, man. You know, what if this shit sank? You know, what if it tanked?
Right.
But I also have a fear that what if I pull out and, you know, I could flip this, you know, that 10 million, I flip that 10 to 20, I could flip this 100 to 200, you know, billion to 2 billion. You see?
Right.
I'm thinking along these lines. I'm thinking like, I'm not thinking about what I got. I'm thinking about what I might miss out of.
Right. Well, they say fear is just like how fire can help you or it can hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Water can kill you, but we need it to survive. So that I look at that fear, like you mentioned, in that same light, it can either be a detriment to you or that fear of like, I can't miss this.
Right.
So you're going to go hard on that.
Yeah.
Are you looking to improve your credit score? Let the professionals at We Management Services help you today. Their team of FICO-certified credit specialists can help you prepare your credit profile for a better tomorrow. Say goodbye to denials, high interest rates, down payments, and the other negative effects of bad credit, and say hello to a healthy financial future. Visit www.wemanagementservices.com or call 702-330-3278 to start your journey to a better credit score today. If you struggle with obtaining funding from the big banks, don't give up just yet. The business funding experts at We Management Services have valuable tools for you to put in your toolkit. Their creative funding strategies, flexible guidelines, and exclusive lender partnerships can help you obtain the funding you need to propel your business ventures to new heights. Visit www.wemanagementservices.com or call 702-330-3278 to learn more about how you can secure up to $250,000 in business funding.
You are listening to the Full-Time CEO, the SHIT They Don't Tell You, with your host, Will Roundtree. Now, back to the show.
So like we were mentioning, so you and I actually met because you reached out to me wanting to understand and learn more about credit.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me a little bit about why that was important to you. Like you mentioned, you're already financially secure in a lot of different areas of your life, but credit was important. And why do you think that they don't teach that part of finances to people in the industry or just people as a whole?
Yeah. What industry?
It can be the music industry or entertainment, period.
I mean, well, people don't teach you the game because, you know, if you know the game, then they're not going to be able to have as, I mean, you're going to cut into the profits,
right,
you know,
right.
Like the more you know,
the less they
get to earn. But that's business. You know, like I would tell anybody, I would tell any of my artists, I'm not going to give you legal advice. First of all, that's a conflict of interest. You go get you a lawyer, and then I'll let your lawyer talk to my lawyer. You know?
Really that simple.
It's that simple. You know, like if you want, if financial advice. Coach, I can tell you, I can give you an idea of who you can talk to, but go get yourself an accountant. You know, I would hate to see any artist that I have under my belt, like, you know, make a bunch of money and blow it. You know, I've only actually put out one artist, you know, and that artist right now is a millionaire, you know, from not from rapping, but from the money that he took and used his money in other areas where I gave him some assistance. He did. I showed him that. So he's a great businessman.
Right.
He owns several companies. And, you know, I'm proud to say that I helped him get that.
Definitely.
See, for me, like, it ain't enough that I got it. I want to see the people around me have it. You know, some people, they don't want the people around them having it because they think that if they have it, they might lose those people. They may lose those people's, the work that those people put in around them, whatever it is that they do, however they serve them. They think they might lose that.
Right.
And my thing is, I just like to see people grow.
Right.
Period. And I don't really want to have no miserable ass people around me anyway. I think if you help people grow, you get more.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think also like if, okay, it's one thing if you're the only person, if it's just one person getting it, what happens if that person can't get it no more than everybody fails? If everybody's just relying on one person and that person run into a stumbling block, a rough patch, and everybody, the whole team right. run into a rough patch. That ain't cool.
All right.
The reason why Jay-Z gets so much respect because everybody around him got money.
That is very true.
And everybody know everybody around him got money. And guess what? Ain't nobody complained about Jay-Z. See, that's how you can tell what time somebody really on. See, a lot of people be talking shit about Jay-Z. From the outside, they don't really know. They don't understand. And people, oftentimes, people with money, they just cannot they can't comprehend what people, right. the kind of moves that are being made and what you got to do, you know, take care of business. Because there's some people like, especially like our people, they think, you know, if you're rich, you're in the Illuminati. You know, they think everybody who got some money is a sellout,
right.
even though they got some money, but they ain't got as much as you got. So they think if you get a certain amount of money, you got to be a sellout.
Right.
But they were there working for AT&T, you know, Exxon, Mobil, whoever the axis of evil is, right. McDonald's right. or whatever. We know the type of shit they sell.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They're working. They getting their money somewhere right. with these companies, these corporations, and all of them got blood on their hands. Ain't none of them clean, you know, but. It's certain people, man, they think you get on a certain level. Oh, man, you Illuminati. You know, like, if they ever find out what I got, boy, they sure gonna call me Illuminati. They gonna be like, they gonna be like, yo, we definitely Illuminati.
Right, right.
But, you know, that's our people, man.
Mm. It's interesting because that is something that is always taught and preached. But that's because I think enough people got too much time on their hands. And that's why we got to keep them active. That's why, you know, I love providing information. I love what you do with your platforms, whether it's, you know, like I say, the social activism. You're always constantly preaching as far as educating people in all areas of life and business. You talk about crypto, you talk about credit, you talk about finances and just always utilizing your platform to give back in some form or fashion. So I definitely appreciate that. So as we wrap up, man, first of all, thank you again for taking time out to do this podcast, this show today. But I do want to ask you this one question, Willie. What is that one thing on your journey that you wish you would have learned that probably could have helped you to excel that you may want to pass back to the younger generation that are coming up? What's that one kind of like piece of advice that you would share that you may not have had in the beginning, but through your years of wisdom that you have now?
Humility. You know, as much as I have now, I could have had some of those things sooner. But I just had this thing like where I believe like, and I still do believe this, so I'm still struggling with this.
Okay.
I believe wherever somebody show off, that's where I'm gonna go off.
Mm.
So if if I have a problem with somebody and somebody do me dirty, I'm gonna get them. I gotta get them because I can't sleep.
Right.
I just will not sleep until I get them. Right. Until I get even. Right. But it ain't what you do; it's how you do it.
Correct.
I learned how to do it.
Right.
Right.
I get you.
That's one of the things. I get you. Like I learned that, I learned to pick my battles.
Okay.
Stop trying to fight everybody. Now, if somebody just need to be tapped, you know,
you gotta do what you gotta do.
To fight everybody. And I'm not even talking about physically. I'm just talking about, you know, in general, like conflict, period. Some things, you know, like, again, it ain't what you say, it's how you say it. You know, there's been times when me and Jay bump heads where, you know, we were kind of like in front of people. I could easily like, yo, man,
put them to the side.
Yo, boom, boom. And things would have went a lot smoother.
Okay.
Because things kind of get turned up when people are around, right? When other people are around,
correct.
You know what I'm saying? Nobody's going to back down,
right?
So, you know, just having that humility, you know, is when I think about like my journey, man, anytime that things are going really, really well, I always pause and I check myself. I say, you're humble, right? Remember, stay humble. You ain't got to tell me that. Nobody has to tell me to be humble. I tell myself, it's going good. Stay humble.
Right.
Because when it's going good, oftentimes people telling us how great we are. And, you know, even when you have like security, people clearing the way for you,
right.
Coming through. And, you know, you don't hear many no's, you know, when you get a bunch of O's. You know what I'm saying?
You know, that's very true.
You don't hear many no's. Right, so when you do hear one, you don't even understand it. Mm. You don't understand.
And that's where that humility got to kick in.
That humility in, man. Right. Rein it in, man. Yep. And just stay humble.
Right.
You know, like, just stay humble. Keep your head down and keep working and keep moving forward. And try to bring as many people who want it along for the ride, right. who deserve it, because that's important too. Everybody don't deserve
very
it.
Very true.
I'm going to tell you straight up, bro. I bring a stranger along before I bring somebody along who hurt me, who did me dirty. Anybody can say what they want to say, but I don't lose any sleep thinking about these people.
Right.
I'm just not going to be the one to put them on because they don't deserve it.
Right.
You know, I don't give a damn. Family or whatever. I don't care. Friend, 50 years. It don't matter.
And that's where that humility has to come in for them, because now they got to humble themselves because of what they did or
the entitlement that they
but it don't
have.
Matter.
Yeah, very true.
They can humble themselves. I'm still not gonna mess with them. Hey man,
right,
appreciate
right.
you figuring it out.
Right.
But I'd rather give it to a stranger.
Definitely.
Than somebody who did me dirty. Like mm-hmm. I'm not a sucker like that. In my mind, I mean, I understand that somebody is a sucker just because they are, but in my mind, that would make me a sucker.
Right.
And I'm not built like that.
Definitely.
You know, I would rather help a stranger. But if I fuck with you, I'm stuck with you.
That's what's
if
up.
If me and you cool, we straight, we kick it. Like you, like anytime you ever need me, man, with me, hit me up, man. I got you.
Definitely,
know what I'm saying?
Always.
And likewise, you know. But family members that I'm cool with, we tight, we talk, that's cool.
Yep.
But motherfucker, don't call me now. You've been having my number for 50 years, 30 right. years, 20 years. Don't call me now. Now that you know what's popping.
Right.
You know
right.
it's popping for real. Don't call me, bro.
Definitely.
Call somebody else.
Definitely. Well, as we wrap up, man, thank you. I appreciate that word of advice. How can people stay in touch with you, your social media platforms, all that you like to share with people?
Yeah, Willie D Live. Just hit me on Willie D Live. If it's business, send me an email. Send me an email.
Just that simple.
Yeah, they can go, you know.
They can find, y'all can find it. That's basically what it's saying.
Yeah.
So we appreciate it today on the Full-Time CEO Podcast, The Shit They Don't Tell You, where we're sitting with the iconic, legendary Willie D. Make sure y'all follow him. If you haven't, then you're just missing out on all of the good stuff that he likes to share with people. But more importantly, make sure y'all stay tuned, because you never know
who's going to be dropping in on the next episode. Until then, I'll see y'all at the top. So if you like this episode of the Full-Time CEO Podcast, The Shit They Don't Tell You, make sure you comment, like, and click below to subscribe to the channel.
Thank you for tuning in to Full-Time CEO, The S-H-I-T They Don't Tell You. Be sure to join Will Roundtree for another edition soon on the Harlem America Digital Network and the Voice America Variety Channel.